Welcome to the Stakeholders Podcast, the show where we try to answer the question, what's at stake? We dive into how an organization's pursuit of their objectives affect or are affected by the people. Our guests come from the private industry, government, education, and more to discuss how they manage with their stakeholders in mind to achieve long-term success. On today's episode, we're joined by Zara Majid, the founder of My Field Trip, a director at Twin Leaf Education, and a member of the Board of Trustees at Whole School Leadership. Zara, I want to thank you for being here. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do?
Andy, thank you so much for having me. I love that we connected through our shared affinity for the Surfrider Foundation. And, I grew up from coast to coast, and as well in the Midwest. And I always like to start with that origin story because I think it shaped a natural lifelong curiosity about education as I experienced living and schooling in different communities. And that led me just after college to work with Teach for America as a core member. And since then, I've been involved in education in a variety of ways, as a teacher, as a school program administrator, and as a consultant. And now, as you mentioned, I'm working with three different initiatives. Two of them, Montessori Trips and Twin Leaf Education, are fairly new, and Whole School Leadership is as well. Whole School Leadership is driven by the mission of connecting and helping Montessori school leaders around the world develop professionally and meet the needs of their school communities and unique stakeholders. Twin Leaf Education is a way for me to stay connected with and serve many of the families who have come my way, who have requested support as their children experience Montessori school and also as they transition out of these very unique Montessori schools into more traditional education or other progressive independent education programs. It has enabled me to work with a variety of schools, including a micro school network that is global, a local community-based nonprofit program just south of Washington, D.C., and a program in Michigan just over the last year. Montessori Trips is the newest of the initiatives and one that I'm very excited about. It helps engage learners, not just in Montessori schools, but in any school at the elementary through middle and high school levels with field learning outside of school, as well as now virtually. And I'm thrilled that we get to chat about these initiatives, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, and Montessori education is a very cool educational system that you started telling me about a little bit in our earlier conversation. Can you tell us a little bit more about its history and the role it's playing in our society now?
That's a great question, Andy. Montessori education took root at the turn of the last century out of the work of a legendary physician, anthropologist, scientist, and educator named Dr. Maria Montessori. In working with children, many of them considered to be special needs, she came to understandings about the universality of our humanity and distinct windows, opportunities, or planes of development that come and go as we grow. And noticed in particular that from birth through age 6, from 6 through age 12, and from 12 through 15, and 15 through 18 years of age, as well as 18 to 24 years of age, we tend to go through a series of specific needs and tendencies that ideally would be nurtured in environments prepared for each age and stage. And initially, our movement grew out of the 3 to 6 year old stage, we had a chat about the Casa dei Bambini, or children's house. Montessori schools the world over are often known for their beautiful children's house environments, where multi-age groups of 3 to 6 year olds interact in an environment of freedom and responsibility through grace and courtesy. They receive lessons from their guides, who are teachers. They follow up on those lessons, whether they're in math or language or sensory development and other areas of learning, and build community as they learn and grow. Montessori schools number around 20,000 worldwide. About 5,000 of them are within the United States, and 500 of those are public programs. And I think it's interesting to note that we've seen growth within the public sector quite rapidly over the last 10 or so years. At the same time, Montessori is strong and well across private, independent, both nonprofit and for-profit programs around the country.
Yeah, and I think that it's something I've experienced, especially with the experiential learning. My final few years of university, I spent some time in CSE Channel Islands. My professors encouraged this heavily. They brought in real businesses for the students to work with and for us to work together rather than to be lectured at. Because to be quite honest, I learned far more in those classes than I ever would have with someone lecturing at me, you know? So I think this is a really powerful tool that you're developing within our nation. And like, the younger you start with this, the better it is, because I do feel that it encourages curiosity.
I think so, absolutely. Curiosity is definitely nurtured. And as I mentioned, there's so many other needs and tendencies and characteristics, right, that we develop throughout our years. We can all go back in time and think, right, what it was like to be that 3 to 6 year old or the 6 to 12 year old and what, you know, innate fascinations, curiosities, and tendencies we had, and how neat would it have been, or would it be, right, to be immersed in an environment that only nurtured those needs and tendencies. And that's the, I think the, you know, the main thesis that stakeholders involved in Montessori education are, you know, continually focused on is, you know, what are the needs of, you know, the group of children we're serving, right, or the community we're serving, and how can we best meet those needs?
Absolutely, and this is a perfect time to dive into the many different stakeholders, students being the first one. Thank you for mentioning them. I'm actually curious, how much do you think responsibility plays into Montessori education? Do you think that it is a core principle of what you're trying to educate the children, or is it not as big of a role as maybe I'm thinking it will be? It is.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up. I mentioned freedom and responsibility as one of the underpinnings or principles of this movement. In every single learning environment from infancy on upwards, even into elder and dementia care now, as Montessori is taking shape there and supporting our elderly community there. You know, we do think about how important it is to provide an environment of freedom with differing levels of responsibility based on the age and stage of children. And then it extends outward from there, right? So we think about other key players or stakeholders in education, certainly parents. We put great emphasis on parent relationships with teachers as well as children, and how responsibility can further play out at home in, again, an environment of freedom. We think too about at the teacher level, there's an interplay between freedom and responsibility there. Teachers or guides are free, right, to develop their environments according to the needs and tendencies of their students. They are free to plan lessons, not to a script or not along a structured curriculum, but according to all of the lessons that they've trained in, implemented whenever their students show they have a need for them. And so along with those freedoms, right, teachers too have a great deal of responsibility in their work to ensure that from day to day, there's equity between the learning experiences of all of the children in their classrooms. And then I think too of administrators and board members of schools, shareholders in some cases, right, and the levels and layers of responsibility they have too. But if I could go back to children and how early we're encouraging responsibility in free environments, I think there are great implications here for civic activity and community activity as our children grow and become, we hope, responsible members of their communities and society. So when children have the opportunity to build responsibility for their community in their classroom, for the physical material resources in their classroom, as they get older, for the program that comes into play around their needs and interests, I think they develop, a real stakeholder presence and an understanding of what it's like to be engaged in a community at a deep level, so that the onus for responsibility towards that community takes shape within every learner.
Yeah, it sounds like you're educating them on how to map out their stakeholders at a very young age so that they know that the only thing that matters is not just their grade, but also their community. And that means that eventually community also means success. Am I implying too much from what you just said?
Oh, Andy, that was a wonderful analysis of stakeholder theory as it may develop within students in our programs. I loved that takeaway. Yeah, I'll certainly refer back to it in future.
I'm glad you like that. That's awesome. So we dove into the students, we dove into administrators and professors. Now, have you identified, obviously, the students will be the primary stakeholders here. We're trying to make sure that we build them up to be successful adults and members of society. Have you identified where the other stakeholder groups fill in into primary versus secondary? And I also want to throw in another group, the parents. Could you enlighten us on that?
Sure. When I think about my work with and on Montessori Trips, an emerging organization, right, that helps learners engage with real world field studies and digital field studies, certainly the learner, the child, right, the student is at the center of this work and is a primary stakeholder. Two, we are working with and through the support of teachers or guides. We are also directly working with administrators as they think about how to, make the wisest budgetary decisions in offering tools and resources, and in some cases, technologies that only benefit their programs. We are also engaging parents in the use of our tools so that, if they need to sign a permission slip for one of these field studies, the process is super easy. We're making it really easy for them by, getting on their phone or getting on their computer or tablet in order to do it, almost instantaneously. And then to sign up to chaperone these trips if they'd like to join them. So our primary stakeholders in this sense and within this organization are our students, teachers, administrators, and parents. I see, too, community members increasingly as primary stakeholders because we're not encouraging students to go on your average field trip, right? That's designed by adults. And that are implemented on somewhat of a fixed schedule. Instead, these happen quite naturally around student interests. And so it may be that there's a group of two students or six students who are fascinated with a subject or a question, right? And they're planning a trip to address this particular subject or series of questions. In doing so, they're not only engaging with a cultural institution, right? A museum or a community center or an outdoor site for exploration, but they're also deeply engaging with the adults who are experts or specialists in these fields and at these locations. So we see two there, community members who serve as specialists as our primary stakeholders. Secondary stakeholders, I would say in this context, perhaps even as we think about Montessori schools globally, are really community members and members of society, right? Individuals, communities, right? Who and that will be served by our children as they grow older and grow into leadership roles and greater levels of responsibility.
Absolutely. And you kind of touched on a principle, the core idea of the stakeholder theory. It's called the no trade-offs. And it's the idea that benefits for one stakeholder group don't necessarily have to mean that another stakeholder group gets benefits taken away from them. And it kind of sounds like what you're doing with Montessori education is you're involving children with community members. You're involving the parents with the children, the teachers, and the administrators. You're involving administrators with all these other groups and the teachers with everyone else. So you're helping everyone help each other, and it's a win-win-win situation. Are there other types of situations like this that you can think of where this no trade-offs principle comes into play?
Yeah, I think deeply about the experiences and interactions between our guides or teachers and children on a daily basis, right? And providing a program that is quite interdisciplinary in nature as children get older, that is tailored to the needs and tendencies observed in students. Guides are, I think, very careful about ensuring that there's equity in working with each child as a stakeholder. So, I once worked with a wonderful coach who prompted me and other teachers to think, are we making sure, to have at least one meaningful interaction and or lesson with each of our students every single day, right? When children are in an environment of freedom and responsibility, it can be fairly easy to get drawn into a long lesson with one and then wonder where the time went, and then think about having to address the needs of another the next day. But a basic principle like that around equity and ensuring that we are planning for and structuring in meaningful engagement with every single child stakeholder every single day is, I think, transformative for the classroom and for the children. And then they grow to expect that, right, they're going to be supported, held to high expectations, and then also expected in one way or another to do some follow through related to a new area of learning. Right, a new lesson. I will say too, we think about teacher professional development, something I've been involved in through Twin Leaf Education, and how, when we're on the ground in a particular school, we can't just invest in our teacher stakeholders outside of school hours, in terms of professional development, without also thinking about the parent experience. And ensuring that parent stakeholders also have opportunities to develop. I will say, across the spectrum of Montessori schools I've had the privilege of visiting or working with, schools are very intentional about making sure that teachers as well as parents are receiving as much as they can wonderful opportunities to develop, also to interact and to build community amongst themselves. We definitely want to make sure that every stakeholder group is engaged and developing and growing.
This is really interesting that you say the having one, correct me, I apologize, the word is missing from my head right now. one meaningful interaction. Thank you very much. That's just wow. Like that is very inspirational, because as a student, I remember that I didn't have that very often. And to be recognized and to be talking to my teachers and my professors in a way that I feel recognized would have changed a lot about the way I perceived the world when I was younger.
You bring up a great point, and what is meaningful for one student may not be meaningful for another, right? So this too brings up that question around differentiation, and how, teachers can develop themselves and equip themselves to really meet the interests of different learners as they, go through their programs. Meaningful interactions, can mean more than just a lesson, let's say a 15-minute lesson that's planned for one child or a small group. They can take the shape of follow-up on a project that has been developed over time, right? So in our classrooms, especially at the elementary and adolescent levels, we often see students return to projects they developed months ago or weeks ago. And meaningful interaction could mean, like I said, not just sharing a lesson, but going back to and revisiting a project that started up a while back and reigniting interest in it so that it moves forward to completion if students are truly interested in bringing them to completion.
Absolutely. And what would you say is your purpose in all of this, in Montessori education? What do you want to achieve?
Facilitating human development and building towards a vision of peace more broadly across our society and our world. And as I engage and re-engage with Dr. Maria Montessori's original writings, with wonderful practitioners in the field, as well as leaders who have developed and shaped new school programs, I'm constantly reminded, Andy, of the promise of peace that this approach to education really offers the world.
That is absolutely beautiful. And honestly, I can't think of a better way to close off the podcast. Zara, I really want to thank you for being a guest. I think that this was very educational for me. I think it'll be very educational for my listeners as well. Are there any final thoughts you would like to give us before we sign off today?
Yeah, Andy, thank you for that. And again, thank you for the opportunity to connect and also to learn from your podcast, featuring so many experts in a variety of fields. I will say sometimes Montessori education is misunderstood as being only for one group of people, perhaps wealthier families, right? Or for those hippie granola families, or existing in one community and not another. And instead, over time, it has grown to include all communities. It has been relevant for and important to cultural groups across the world. Indigenous groups, communities in urban environments, communities that are under-resourced as well as very affluent, parents across the spectrum of education levels. And I think of that area of learning that I've come to and that reflection, because I think what we can take away from Montessori education can transcend and be applied to so many other areas of work and community engagement. And so I'd love to end with that.
Absolutely. And if there are any parents, any teachers, any administrators out there, I highly encourage you to follow the links in the bio of this podcast. Make sure that you check out and learn more about Zara's work and about Montessori in general. Other than that, Zara, thank you very much for joining us again, and I will see the rest of my listeners in the next episode.
Thank you, Andy.